The death of one of my last remaining aunts called me home to Iowa this past week. With the funeral came the cousins, and with the cousins came the talk, and with the talk came the memories, one after another after another. And so I suppose it was only natural that as I thought about today's gospel, I thought about it against the background of a memory, an old, old memory, one that's 60 years old or so. You see, when I was a boy, I'd spend a few weeks every summer with Grandpa and Grandma Mokel in Tama, Iowa, a town that's just about as small as it probably sounds to you. And two doors down from 607 Oswego Street, where Grandpa and Grandma lived, there was an old widow woman named Mrs. Ballou. I don't even remember if she had a first name, just Mrs. Ballou. She was a good 20 years or so older than my own grandmother, and so as a boy of 5 or 6, she was just impossibly old, you know? Her children had all since moved away and she was alone. So most days after we had had lunch, my grandmother would put together a plate of leftovers, make her a sandwich out of the scraps of last Sunday's ham or roast, sometimes even take a piece of homemade pie and include that too, which always broke my heart to see a piece of homemade pie walk out the door. One piece of homemade pie that I would never have. And then she'd go down to Mrs. Ballou's with it, but she'd bring me along because she said that it really cheered the heart of Mrs. Ballou to see a child like me. Well, I'd sit quietly, or as quietly as a 5 or 6 year old could sit, while the two of them visited with each other back and forth in Czech, a language that I did not understand at all. It was like being at the gates of hell, you know? There inside this musty house, the shades drawn tight against the summer day outside, all I wanted to do was be outside and run and play and do all those things that 5 or 6 year old boys love to do. And eventually Grandma would dismiss me to it and I would explode out the doors, free at last to be able to enjoy myself the way I deserved. So, why this particular memory with this particular gospel? Let me come at it this way. The gospel begins by Jesus simply remarking that there was a rich man and outside his gates there was a poor man. I found myself wondering about the first time that that poor man came to be there. The first time that the rich man came home from whatever he had been doing and discovered poor Lazarus there. The first time that Lazarus stretched his hand out in a beseeching kind of way, hoping for whatever. The first time that the rich man looked at him and then looked away. The first time that the rich man walked around him, opened his door, walked inside, and shut the door against the inconvenient presence of Lazarus out in his courtyard. There must have been a first time that that happened. And I found myself wondering further, what went through the mind of that rich man when he did that? When he first ignored Lazarus, first stepped around him, first walked through his door without doing a thing? I think I know what went through his mind because I know what goes through my mind when I betray myself and do not reach out to someone that I can see. I'm sure he had all kinds of explanations as to why it was that Lazarus was not his responsibility. Somebody else should take care of it. After all, there was so much need in the world, how could he possibly change anything with just this one person? You know, he wasn't even from the same town, after all, for heaven's sakes. And whatever he did, he'd only use it, squander it on drink or drugs or something like that, I'm sure. But whatever it was that went through his mind as he needed to justify his walking past Lazarus, my guess is that the second time he walked around Lazarus, it came easier, which made the third time easier still, and then the fourth, and the fifth, and week after week after week, until such time as he didn't even see Lazarus anymore. He didn't even see him. Which is exactly the point where this parable of Jesus intersects with my memory of my grandmother and Mrs. Ballou. Because you see, unlike the rich man who did not even see Lazarus after a while, my grandmother saw Mrs. Ballou. She saw her. She saw her in her age and in her infirmity. She saw her in her isolation and aloneness. She saw her in her humanity and in her need. And in seeing Mrs. Ballou this way, she saw Mrs. Ballou in another way. She saw Mrs. Ballou not just with her eyes alone. She saw Mrs. Ballou with her heart. Unlike me, I hardly saw Mrs. Ballou with my six-year-old eyes. I certainly did not see her with my six-year-old heart, because my six-year-old eyes and my six-year-old heart were so firmly focused somewhere else on that summer day out there that Mrs. Ballou was between me and enjoying it. She was not a person the way she was for my grandmother. She was kind of a thing, and an inconvenient thing, an obstacle, something that was in my way and I needed to get past and be free of. Oh, sure, I know what you'll say. Why, Mike, you were only 5 or 6 years old, and you know what 5 or 6 year olds are like. You know, they can be loving and kind and cute and surprise you with their generosity, but man, by and large, you know, they're kids, and like any kids, they're kind of the centers of their own universe. And I grant you that, except that what got me thinking was that if Mrs. Ballou was kind of the first person that I chose not to see, there's a line of people who come after her that I've also chosen not to see. And in a way, my choosing not to see Mrs. Ballou made it easier for me not to see the next person I chose not to see. Just like the first time the rich man stepped around Lazarus made it easier for him to step around Lazarus a second time. And after there was the second person I chose not to see, there was, I'm sure, the third and the fourth and the fifth, and on and on and on. Why do I think this way? Because I know from my own life today how hard it is for me to see people, to really, really see people, see them as the human beings they are. See them in the midst of all their complications and their needs. See, for example, that young mother pushing the baby carriage across the street, or see those folks at the bus shelter, or see that guy panhandling at the exit ramp from the interstate, or see that kid on campus, you know, with the purple hair today, tomorrow it's blue, you know. And on and on and on. Sure, my eyes register them. Obviously, I couldn't tell you about them unless they did. But do I see them? Do I see them the way my grandmother saw Mrs. Ballou? Not even a little bit. Not even a little bit. And you know, it doesn't seem to be just me. Sometimes I think that whole industries have grown up around the business of not seeing people. People who are very young indeed, who are not even born yet, or people who are very old, people everywhere in between. People in prisons or in our inner cities, especially when they are on land we want for something else. People who are at our borders. People with whom we disagree politically. You know, doesn't it strike you that life is so much easier when you don't see people? Because if you don't see people, they don't make a claim on you. You don't have to do anything then. You're free to play outside on that summer day, go about your business, whatever it might be, however it is you want to do it, without your having to change your path or your plans at all. So what about you? Do you ever not see people? You know, as you're driving around town or waiting in line or doing whatever it is you're doing, look right past them, through them, turn your head so that you won't have to see. And when you do that, do you do what I do, which is explain it to yourself, justify it, talk about how well it's their responsibility, really, they should just grow up or move or go back or get a job or take some responsibility or whatever. That little voice inside us that lets us off the hook, that little voice that is never, ever the voice of Christ, that's a voice that we need to listen for. Catch ourselves in the saying of those words in our head. And then do the exact opposite of what it is they counsel us to do. Because if we don't get used to listening to that voice and acting the other way, we run the risk someday of hearing that voice very clearly say, Father Abraham, send that unwed mother or that migrant child or that whatever or whoever, send that one to some cool, cool water, would you please? To dip their finger in that water on my behalf, because you know, it sure is stuffy in here. Our faith tells us, friends, that the kingdom of God that we look for and that Lazarus and his many brothers and sisters enjoy, that kingdom of God will come to us someday with thunder and light and trumpets. But the thunder and the trumpets and the light, they'll have to wait for someday. Because the kingdom of God, truth be told, comes to us now, disguised as a piece of homemade pie, served up with compassion, or as a listening ear donated in sympathy. But first, you and I have to open our eyes clearly to see the brothers and the sisters around us the way God sees them in all their complexity, sees them in all their humanity, sees them in all their need. We open our eyes like that, guaranteed. The kingdom of God is not far behind.